Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Ah, well said, Chris Morales. Amen. Amen. Clinton, I said it. I meant it. I don't think in my heart I believed it. I think that I was encouraging Bubba Wallace and telling him I supported him in his fight. But I got to tell you, and I know you are a NASCAR fan more than I am. I've only been to a couple of races. But the Confederate flag has been part of the culture at NASCAR for as long as I can remember. And 20 minutes ago, NASCAR came out and said, we're done. We're banning all Confederate flags. Are you, as somebody who follows the sport and likes it, surprised?
I am beyond surprised. Let me tell you all something. As a journalist who is a professionally online person who does not use vulgarity that often, I cussed on Twitter because it was that surprising. Flatly. You know, it was less than 2 months ago that Kyle Larson basically jettisoned his career because he dropped an N-bomb during an iRacing live broadcast. That's where we were. Racers were using that word freely, even though they were getting caught for it and people were weirded out. But that was something that was happening. 2 months later, this is where we are? I'm sorry. I am beyond shocked. And I'm not going to lie here. It's a little emotional. Because when you think about NASCAR's place in America, and you think about all of the people who argue for the representation, the heritage versus history, NASCAR, like it or not, was the last bastion of that in the super mainstream. And for this to go down, I don't know. I mean, it feels like a civil rights victory. And I'm being very serious about that. You know, there's a reason why a lot of black folks are considered persons non grata in NASCAR. And people think, oh, well, you're flying Confederate flags. I ain't going to the racetrack. This, to me, is one of the biggest single cultural events in sports I can think of in my life. I mean, I don't know what else I can think of that really rates up this high in terms of structural changes that really make an impact, not only on the people who are already serving them, but the people who are not, who are looking upon and saying, good for you. NASCAR is making a risk here, but by doing the right thing. And I'm beside myself. It's pretty amazing, and it is very, very cool. Understand that.
And Clinton, it's another example of how the temperature in the country has changed. And it's all happened in the last 3 weeks. This is something that if Bubba Wallace brings it up without these protests and without the tragic death of George Floyd and without the change we've undergone in this country over the past 3 weeks, I don't think he pushes it through. Even though he is a black man in a predominantly white sport that was created in the South, I just think that, you know how hard it was for, for the governors and the legislators down in those states to get, they used to fly as recently as 2-3 years ago, fly Confederate flags outside state houses.
Yeah.
You know, and they all said, we're taking down the statues, we're taking down the monuments. You know, and now this, okay, Ramona was on yesterday, and she made a really good point. In the 70s and early 80s, there was a hit show on CBS called Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a car they called the General Lee.
Yep.
You know, General Robert E. Lee was one of the leading generals during the Civil War for the South. And they called it General Lee. It had a Confederate flag painted on the car, and it was on CBS every Friday night.
Right.
Of course, Clinton, you could never get away with that now, but at the same time, people would protect that as art. You know, they would say, well, you know what? It's our history. Leave it alone. If people want to put a Confederate flag on top of their motorhome and go to the infield at a NASCAR race, that's freedom. That's their right as an American. And you know what? It's not, your right doesn't outweigh the fact that you're making hundreds, if not thousands of people at that race feel uncomfortable. You wouldn't allow somebody to walk through the infield at a NASCAR race with a Ku Klux Klan hood on. So why should they be? I can't believe NASCAR did it, because they've always been, as you said, like the last bastion of the past,
whatever that was.
Yeah.
Losers with, you know, participation trophies, which is basically what it is from a historical standpoint. And Ireland, I don't have to get that far into America. I mean, that's obviously big, but I want to return to the Kyle Larson thing for one reason. Kyle Larson was a part of a program called Drive for Diversity, D4D. Kyle Larson's parents, you know, grandparents were interned in America, Japanese. Like, the guy in the diversity program who was like its biggest star from a success standpoint is the one who was literally using the N-word on a live broadcast. Think about how deep that is. We've
and
gone
Clinton,
from
wasn't
that.
It a virtual race?
Yes,
they weren't even real cars.
No, I mean, he was just online. You know what I'm saying? But my point is that was how sort of deep-seated their issues were in terms of how they were outwardly representing themselves. And now they've made the coup of all coups, eliminating one of the most ridiculously celebrated things in the history of the United States of America, which technically that doesn't even represent. If you want to ask a historian, that's another story. But I'm surprised by this on a business level. I'm surprised by this on a social level. And I'm happy. You know, it feels like the right thing. And I haven't said that in a really, really long time, but I've said it a bunch of times in the past 2 weeks. It's weird.
Right. And, you know, when you were on with me the other day, we were talking about, well, the outrage is real. We understand that. But the outrage was real when Trayvon Martin was killed in 2014. People were mad and upset, and there were NBA players. And when Eric Garner was killed, and the whole NBA was wearing shirts that said, "I can't breathe." And yet, Clinton, we came right back. It didn't inspire this type of change. The other day, we had Torrey Hunter, the former All-Star outfielder for the Twins and the Angels, on the morning show. I had to do the morning show on Friday because I lost a bet to Travis, so I had to pull it up.
That is the worst possible reason to have to do the morning show. That's funny.
But it was fun. I like working with Key and LZ, and Travis.
I love it.
Travis boat raced me on the golf course, so I deserved it. But
they're great.
We were talking about the fact that, and apparently everybody in baseball knows this, that when you go to Fenway Park to play the Red Sox, they treat the black players like crap.
Yep.
And it's been going on for years. And we asked Torrey, well, like, how bad is it? What happens? Here's what Torrey Hunter said.
Man, it was a tough time. You know, we go there, and I always wanted to play with Boston. And, you know, but my first time in 2000, not really my first time, but my first time hearing it was 2000. And I heard it, and I looked up. It was two little boys, you know, saying the N-word, and I told the cop there, I told the parents, I mean, shut him up. And they was like, no. They throw their hands up like, you know, like it's a joke. I'm like, no, you're going to teach those two little boys right now, which from 2000, they might be grown-ups, and they got hate in their heart.
And so today, Clinton, again, less than half an hour ago, the Red Sox, on their team Twitter account, wrote this: Torrey Hunter's experience is real. If you doubt him because you've never heard it yourself, take it from us, it happens. Last year, there were 7 reported incidents at Fenway Park where fans use racial slurs, and those are just the ones we know about.
Right, reported.
And it's not only players. It happens to the dedicated black employees who work for us on game days. Their uniforms may be different, but their voices and experience are just as important. And they go on. That's the beginning of the statement. But look at what's happening. NASCAR just banned Confederate flags. The Red Sox just came out as a team and said, yeah, all those rumors about our team, our ballpark being unwelcoming to black players, it's 100% true. I'm telling you, there is a culture shift going on. Now, does that mean that there isn't going to be a black guy that gets harassed by the police today? Probably not.
No.
But I'll tell you what, it's going to be a lot harder for anybody to do that in public. And the standards, Clinton, that we were living by 3 weeks ago are now completely different. And sports is falling. I mean, sports is leading by example here. And the Red Sox thing and the NASCAR thing are just two of the latest examples.
I've just been sitting here since I read that news, literally just staring at the wall, just thinking about all the things that could impact. And I tweeted this. I said, you know, I'm from D.C., and the NFL team there has a racist mascot. And this is the kind of thing
what
that makes
it?
Me think.
I'm not aware of that. What is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a word I don't use. And it's
no,
like
but I've,
this...
I mean, are you, so you're talking about, you're just talking about the Redskins.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is that this is the kind of thing where you're like, yo, if they're going to drop the Confederate flag from NASCAR, this is looking worse and worse and worse. Not just for the NFL, I mean, not just for, you know, Washington and Dan Snyder's team, but for the NFL. You're like, yo, dog, times are changing and changing a quick. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to do it by their own volition, but this is the first time in a long time I've thought, you know what? This just might not stand anymore because we're just not doing that. And I don't know how many bigger pillars can fall than NASCAR banning the Confederate flag. And let me say this quickly, though, Ireland. Let's be real. There's a timing element to this that makes it almost perfect. There's no fans in the stands. So you're not necessarily changing what you're seeing in the product on television. What you're doing is you're setting a standard for when people come back to the racetrack, which will also make it easier to enforce, which is key here. If there's no COVID and this is just Black Lives Matter related, I don't think this happens in the same way. You see what I'm saying? Just like you said that Bubba probably doesn't get it through, I don't think this happens in the same way. They've got a bit of an out in that regard because they don't have any real backlash from human beings, which makes it brilliant on top of tremendous. I'm A+. I don't know what else to say.
Right. There's not going to be a race this weekend where they have to enforce this new rule. And it you make a great point. It actually gives them political cover to ramp this up for a few months. You know, I can't remember if I did it with you the other day or if I just did it with Ramona, where I told the story about Greg Popovich on the Flying Coach podcast with Steve Kerr and Pete Carroll.
That was me. That was on Monday.
Okay, so Pop pointed out, and I know this is repetitive for people that listened the other day, but Pop pointed out that you can change the perception of anything in America if you want it bad enough. And the example he gave was it's no longer acceptable to be a drunk driver. Believe it or not, 30 years ago, we kind of all laughed that off. If you go back and watch movies, you'll see, you know, guys getting drunk and hopping in a car and going joyriding. You won't see that anymore. And Pop's example was that was mothers that did that.
Mm-hmm.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving made driving drunk and anybody who considers it a pariah. And now what I think is happening, Clinton, is anybody who would dare now to bring a Confederate flag to a NASCAR race is going to get shouted down by the good angels. It's no, you know, 2 weeks
ago. I don't know about that. I don't think it's going to be that easy, but I do think, I mean, go on, but I that's going to be where the rubber hits the road, pardon the track pun there. But
okay,
that's where it's going to be tough.
Yeah, but that now what they have behind them is they have the track. In other words, if you see, you know, it's the same policy you hear about at baseball games. If you see something, say something.
Right.
If somebody is sitting in your section and using the F word and screaming it at the field, the ushers will throw them out. I mean, and it can be as simple as if somebody has a sign that has something offensive on it, they'll take the sign, and if the person won't give up the sign, they'll get rid of the person. Now, you can say that about a Confederate flag.
Right.
Before today, if I was flying a Confederate flag on top of my motorhome and you came up to me and said, "Hey man, that's cool. Why don't you, or that's not cool. Why don't you take that down?" It was just me against you. Now all you got to do is go to the usher or who's ever running the track going, "Hey man, those are banned. Can you take care of that?" And they get security and do it for you. It's a different game now.
Yep.
And that's the significance of what happened today.
Exactly, right. I mean, the idea of kicking people out is key. Like, it's not just taking the flag. You know, I think if you've got teeth on that, you say if you bring that, you're not coming in. You don't just get rid of it. I mean, we'll see how they adjudicate that. But I think that's a critical element here, Ireland. It's like, what do you actually do when somebody gets caught with it? Do you throw them out immediately? Do you take the flag? I'll be interested to see how that works once crowds get back.
But my thought is that you first you take the flag and say those aren't allowed here, And if the person fights back on it, you say, well, then you're not welcome. Get lost. We have the right.
I mean, I might go a step farther. If you're going so far after this ban to show up to a race this many months later with a flag, you know, I don't know that you have to have that step. I don't know that you have to have the probation. You know, there's an outside argument that you just say, if you show up with that thing, you're not getting in. If I see it when you're in, you're getting out. And you might get banned. I mean, there's ways to make this a mega teeth policy, you know, and I don't know that that's going to happen, but if you're banning it for the reasons that you say that you're banning it, zero tolerance should probably be how you do that. You know, there's no reason to give anybody any warnings for the Confederate flag. We know what's going on.
Yeah, there's an old saying in politics that there is nothing that can stop an idea whose time has come. There's just nothing that can stop it. And I think you're seeing it every day now with this stuff. You're seeing it. You know, you're seeing the Confederate flag banned. You're seeing the Red Sox face the music. You're seeing NFL players take a stand. You're seeing Clinton. What are the odds? If I would have said to you a month ago, Roger Goodell's going to come out and say we were wrong and Black Lives Matter on a video, you would have said, get the F out of here.
Right.
You know, you would have said, what is wrong with you, Ireland? You're an idiot. Exactly. But it's all happening.
I want some. Right.
Yeah. It's all happening. And coming up next, something happened today. It was cleaned up today, but it never should have happened in the first place. And it has to do with USC. We'll get into it next. Mason and Ireland, Clinton Yates in for Mace, 710 ESPN. Mason and Ireland show. I'm John Ireland. We're lucky to have Clinton Yates in for Mace today. And Clinton, USC just got out of a press conference. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's still going on. That they announced they are reinstating Reggie Bush as part of the USC family. They were forced to disassociate from Reggie Bush as part of their penalties 10 years ago in 2010. And to give you a little background on this, when I became a sportscaster at Channel 2 and Channel 9 in 1996, and when Reggie Bush came along, I've only seen one college football player ever better than him, and it was Marshall Faulk. I never thought I would see another Marshall Faulk until I saw Reggie Bush.
I used to love Marshall Faulk highlights because it was like him breaking the line and just running by himself for like 15
yards.
That and was
Reggie
every single
was,
touchdown.
Reggie was similar. It was like both those guys, it was like playing Tecmo Bowl, if you remember that game where you've got Bo Jackson and he just run wild through the game.
Exactly.
But Reggie was electric. He won the Heisman Trophy. He helped lead USC to two national championships and almost a third when Texas and Vince Young knocked off that undefeated USC team in the Rose Bowl. But Reggie was as big of a college star during the Pete Carroll era as anybody. He was one, you know, Carson Palmer won the Heisman, Matt Leinart won the Heisman, Reggie won the Heisman. Reggie was the one who shined the brightest. He was electric. Just, I mean, you couldn't take your eyes off him, Clinton. He was as exciting of a college player as I've, you know, it's a two-man discussion for me. Marshall Faulk and Reggie Bush.
Fresno State run seals it. I mean, it's just one of the greatest college highlights ever.
The all of a sudden, USC gets investigated, and they get cited for lack of institutional control. And because Mike Garrett, who was the athletic director at the time, didn't take it seriously, and Clinton, you don't know this about me, but I hate the NCAA. I think they're the most bogus organization in the world. I think they should be disbanded. I think the conferences should legislate sports. I think the NCAA are the Keystone Cops. They cannot get out of their own way, and they constantly make the wrong decision. And Amen. This is another example. So they decide they're going to throw the book at USC. Now, keep in mind, we all know in the SEC, they've been doing money handshakes, you know, forever down there. And if you just, all you got to do is read or watch any documentary, and you know that those schools are doing, if not the exact same thing, sometimes worse than USC was. But because Mike Garrett was pompous, and he got caught at a booster meeting saying, the NCAA will never investigate us, they all just want to be Trojans, we're USC, we're fine. And the NCAA said, oh, really? You're not going to play ball with us? Okay, two-year probation. And Reggie Bush is disassociated from the school because his parents took a house from an agent. And they said, he can have nothing to do with USC. You have to give back your Heisman Trophy. You have to vacate all your wins. All right, so they throw the book at USC, which I thought was unfair and ridiculous, but the Reggie Bush thing is the thing I want to concentrate on.
Mm-hmm.
Never before had they taken such a high-profile guy and said, "You're no longer. We're going to erase all the memories that you gave USC fans. We were all there, and we all saw it happen. But we're going to pretend Reggie Bush didn't exist." And it was so incredibly stupid. They acted like Reggie Bush was the first person who ever made a mistake in a corrupt industry of college football. Reggie this morning was on with our friend Colin Cowherd over at Fox Sports on The Herd. And Funch, I want to play the second bite. Here's Reggie talking about being banned by USC.
It's tough. It's very tough. You know, I went through a lot as a person. I went through a lot as a man. A lot of my confidence as a man was shot down. And, you know, I had some struggles throughout my career in the NFL because of the things that happened to USC. A lot of the things that I experienced that I went through that, you know, I went through that I had to deal with, you know, from backlash, from everything that happened. It was tough. It was not easy. But this is the thing for me. I couldn't stay in that spot because if I stayed in that spot, then I never would have, you know, had the opportunity to really enjoy my time in New Orleans. And that's the thing, you know, everything happened so quick. You know, for me, I got drafted, went to New Orleans, a team, an organization that needed change in a city that had just been destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. So I quickly had to get to work. But this always lingered in the back of my head. It always lingered in the back of my mind. It's the thing that kept me up late at night, almost every night. And it's the thing that, you know, that kind of haunted me, too, as well.
And it was completely unnecessary, Clinton. They didn't have to make an example out of him. He did nothing but get the sport tons of ratings and put USC and make millions of dollars for USC. Did he break rules? Yes. Did they get punished? Yes. But to single him out and put him through 10 years of a ban is absurd. And USC did the right thing today, welcoming him back. I wish they would have done it 8 years ago, but the NCAA wouldn't even let him do that. They said, if you want us to lighten up on our penalties, then you have to keep disassociating yourself from Reggie Bush. Just so pompous and arrogant and stupid. What, from you watching this from afar, what did you think of just the whole Reggie Bush thing and how it played out?
It came down to one word. It was mean. And that was the strangest thing about it. And it was like, whoa, what? I'm sorry. Guy got a house? And is the house going to tackle him? On the, you know,
was for his parents. Wasn't even for
him. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I mean, what are we even talking about here? Like, this guy was obviously the best football player that anybody in America watched for two whole seasons. Like, and it, I remember thinking, like, wow, and I know you mentioned the AD stuff, but I remember thinking, you know, that was a pretty flashy team at the time. You know, a lot of people around the campus, you know, there was a star-laden team for a college team. And I was thinking, dang, that's a real whack way to go out. You know what I mean? Even though it wasn't really their fault, and it was kind of the beginning and the end. And I think that what I take away from this most grandly is that, you know, Reggie Bush has been a pretty class act through all this. You know, he's now a broadcaster. He's back in the game. He was just commenting a couple weeks ago about it, obviously, in terms of be careful what you wish for, you know, with the money and stuff. And I'm just glad Reggie Bush is okay in the sense of you try to break a guy's spirit like that in terms of his connection to college. There was no guarantee he was going to be anything in the pros. You know what I mean? There was no guarantee that he was going to be able to sort of eke out, not even eke out. He had a respectable career in the NFL. You know, this could have been the kind of thing that for a kid drastically changes your life path if you feel that the place where you did your best work is suddenly disconnected from you. You know, like, I don't think that, I think that's kind of the problem with a lot of these regulations and these penalties is that the reason why you want to go to a cool school is so that you can go back to the school and hang out.
Well,
people talk to you.
Look at all the stuff he did for them.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, you're legitimately
wearing number 5 today because of him.
And that's what I mean.
Like,
it was
kids. That's what they.
It was legitimately. It was legitimately mean to say you can't even go back, like, or you can't even be associated. It's like, okay, fine, vacate everything. That's fine. Take back a trophy, but to disassociate, that was the mean part. And I remember thinking, man, Reggie Bush is going to have a heck of a way to go, and he's made it out on the other end. And he's obviously, you know, a smart man. That's just looking back on that, it seems so ridiculous. And now it almost seems like of all the things, all the dominoes we've had dropping, this was actually a pretty big one. but doesn't really measure up to everything because the news fairy came down today. But it's an accomplishment for USC, and it's just another reason to remind us the NCAA has to go.
Here's more Reggie with Colin this morning on The Herd. Here's his initial reaction to coming back to USC.
I was excited. This has been something I've dreamed of for a long time, you know, to be able to come home and spend time with some of the younger players, some of the coaches, some of the faculty, the staff members there. You know, there's still people there that I've developed strong, close relationships with that I've known for a very long time, all the way down to the equipment people. And that's, you know, a testament of what we built in our time there while I was at USC. You know, we built relationships that extended far beyond the football field. And most, and if not all, the people, you know, that I've spent time with there, especially my teammates, I consider family. And to this day, you know, we are that relationship, again, like I said, goes far beyond the football field. So for me, we're excited to be back. Can't wait to get to the university and get to know some of the young players there, and start to help, you know, initiate change and just help bring back greatness to USC.
So I commend Carol Folt and Mike Bone, the new administration there, for getting this done today. I wish they would have let you do it sooner, but the NCAA is a bunch of bobos who don't know what they're doing, and this was an incredibly wrong, another wrong decision by the NCAA. And if you're a USC fan, you should welcome Reggie Bush back with open arms, because if you think he's the only guy whoever took illegal benefits, you think he's the only Heisman winner to ever take illegal benefits, you are living in a fantasy land. As a matter of fact, Clinton, they're already moving legislation to make name and likeness that you can monetize that moving forward. Yeah. And had Reggie Bush been able to sell his own jersey at the student store at USC, he would have made $2-3 million.
He would have bought 10 houses for his parents.
Right. And so we're really going to hold that against something that people decided was so stupid that they don't even have the rule anymore, and you're going to hold it over his head? I hope not. I hope people realize
Island, you're a little upset.
This guy got hosed. Reggie Bush served a 10-year stupid sentence for because the NCAA doesn't know what they're doing. Okay, we'll move
on. Trying to calm me down. I just want to say it this way. I'm happy.
UCLA guy.
I'm happy. I know, but you seem a little upset, and you're running the race cars in the red. I'm just saying this is ultimately a good moment for USC. That's how I'm trying to look at this. Reggie is back. The family is back. You can promote, and you can talk about the things that happened in a way that USC could use right now. I'm looking at this as good for Trojan fans in the Trojan community. That's the way I'm choosing to see this.
Okay, coming up, MLS is back. The LAFC is back. The Galaxy is back. All of it, if you're a soccer fan, is coming back. They announced it today. It's not exactly what you're used to. John Thorington, the GM at LAFC, is going to join us next. He'll explain exactly what soccer fans can expect moving forward. Clinton Yates is in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. This is Mason in Ireland, ESPN LA.
Hey.
Mason in Ireland. Clinton Yates is in for Mace. And
what's up, kiddos?
We're rolling on. And so baseball is still not back. They're still negotiating. We'll get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, the NBA is coming back with this this setup in Orlando.
Playoffs starting, plus.
Yes, starting with the games on July 31st. College football and the NFL are full steam ahead. We get golf back this weekend, Clinton.
Wow.
The golf is at the Colonial in Texas. And so most sports are announcing that they're coming back. And one of the teams that's coming back is the LAFC. Of course, you can hear all the LAFC games here on ESPN LA 710. And John Thorington, their GM, nice enough to join us now. John, how are you holding up in these crazy times?
We're surviving. You know, one foot in front of the other. I think, thankfully, we are starting to feel some sense of normalcy resume. Players getting back, you know, the announcement of our return to play, things like that. But it's been an adjustment for sure for myself, for staff, for work, for family, all sorts of things similar to everybody.
Go ahead, Clinton.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, people, you know,
people think about COVID and they think about, you know, what hasn't been able to happen in terms of the games. And I think that when people think about MLS, they don't always think about some of the other stuff like labor agreements. I mean, there's a new CBA this year, you know, that was a thing. I just wonder for those of us who were sort of in that discussion in terms of more than just getting back to the field, like how much of that sort of was, you know, on the table and, you know, what did that look like in terms of what was happening in the offseason with MLS?
Yeah, it was, I mean, what a horrible confluence of events. You had, you know, a CBA that came to a really positive resolution in January, then COVID hit and the CBA hadn't been routed. You know, it was, you know, an almighty mess that needed unraveling. And, you know, I have to credit the players, credit the league for the part they played in coming together on an agreement. And you know, without a CBA, as you guys know, there are no games. So it was a critical component to this multi-layered negotiation and conversation about returning to play. And I, for one, you know, I share the opinion of many that I'm just so grateful that we were able to overcome that obstacle and announce that we're going to be playing games in July.
John Thorington, the GM of the LAFC, is with us. John, explain to the fans, it's not what we're used to, well, especially with you guys. I mean, at Bank of California, you had such a unique home field experience with the 32-52. It won't be that. Very similar to the NBA. They're going to go to Orlando, and it's a tournament format, right? Kind of explain how this is going to work.
Yeah, sure thing. So to touch on your first point, you know, it is well worth mentioning the difference our supporters make, and you know, not just at Bank of California. I mean, they certainly make their presence known there, but I would say we have the best traveling support of any MLS team I've ever seen. I mean, our fans show up absolutely everywhere, and when possible, in real numbers. So we get a boost everywhere from our supporters, our players, our staff, and the organization is so intimately connected with our supporters, and that'll be greatly missed, obviously, as we enter this new reality of playing without fans, which I hope will be for just a limited period of time, and we can look forward to our full houses at Bank California again. And so we're entering this tournament. It's a central site in Orlando where we will be grouped within our conference, and we will play. There's sort of two parts to the competition. One will be a group element where those games will actually count and continue our league season, which we had completed two games before COVID hit. And then depending on how you do in those league games, you enter into a knockout style tournament that will be into a round of 16. So it's a two-part competition, and it's not the norm, but I think as we all have learned, we need to adjust to this new the new reality. And as I say, we're just grateful that we see the light at the end of the tunnel. And while not perfect, because we won't have our amazing supporters there cheering us on, I do think this provides us an opportunity to reconnect with our fans. And I think there will be some new interactive elements that ESPN will show on their broadcasts on national TV, et cetera, just to make sure that we're engaging with our fans as best as possible.
Complicated MLS tournament formats that are confusing people? I'll never. I'm joking. I'm loving it. I love the fact that you guys are coming back. But more largely, though, it's interesting because, you know, MLS is one league, but soccer as a global game with the Bundesliga coming back was kind of looked at as a pioneer. And I wonder, like, because it's not like other American leagues and things were happening in other parts of the world, you know, they're playing in Costa Rica and stuff. Was there any part of that that not pushed things up, but kind of motivated people a little more when you're saying, hey, they're playing there. We can figure this out. We can do something. Was any of that part of what you sort of felt was the attitude regarding how you got back to this tournament?
Yeah, I certainly sensed, and not just with sports, but I just felt with the pandemic in general, we had the slight benefit of observing other countries who were further ahead of the curve. And usually you use the term ahead of the curve as a positive. In this case, it wasn't with the numbers of the pandemic. But certainly once you saw the momentum of sports returning in other countries, and then certainly the Bundesliga and how they've effectively been able to resume play in Germany in in home stadium. So they're doing something a little bit different in continuing their home and away matches without fans, whereas we're the safe and early, the earliest safe solution we have was the central tournament idea in Orlando. But certainly we're benefiting from observing what is going on in these other countries and in other sports.
We're talking to John Thorington, the GM of the LAFC. Soccer is coming back, the MLS, into a tournament in Orlando starting in July. July 7th is the date, John, where it all kicks off?
I believe it's July 8th, and draw will be tomorrow. So the first, every group will start on a different day. So the first game for LAFC will be between July 8th and 13th, and we'll know that exact date tomorrow.
Okay. Hey, I don't want to, I know you're not going to want to comment on another team's business, but I did want to ask you, there was an ugly story involving the Galaxy, and they ended up releasing one of their players whose wife made some controversial tweets. I'm curious, John, if you talk to your players or if you guys address the fact that the climate now is different. What these players say and do, or in the case of the Galaxy player, actually what his spouse did, can affect everything moving forward. Is that a discussion you guys have inside your building? Do you just trust your players to be smart enough not to step in it? Or what the dialogue that's going on publicly now, the protests right outside your stadium, how much of that is on your plate and is part of your day inside your building?
Yeah, I would say it's a huge part of it. And I think we have a vow to have a culture where we are very inclusive. I think I credit our whole organization for that. And we also welcome this dialogue. So, you know, I would say both things are true. We do remind players of their responsibility, their obligation, their responsibility and their platform that they do have. But we also do trust them to voice them in the appropriate way. And a lot of our players have, and we're very proud of that. And I'd say we've done that as an organization as best we can. Look, this is, you know, current circumstances led to some real hard, challenging conversations, and we don't shy away from those. And, you know, I would share Bob Bradley and our staff's opinion that we encourage our players, and you've seen our players sharing those opinions. And, you know, we care deeply about the character of our players, and we've been very proud of their response and their willingness to share their opinions on these issues plaguing our country.
Well, we appreciate you doing this, man. And most of all, good luck with the tournament. I know that that we need some luck here. We need COVID to stay under control, and we need everybody to stay safe and healthy. So, John, I'm sending all my Irish luck your way, and I hope you guys get your tournament in and that it's a great one.
Much appreciated. We greatly appreciate it. Any support you can throw our way, we'll take it.
Okay, thanks, man. Stay safe. By the way, Clinton, that was an extraordinary issue that you weren't on the air for last week. That player, the last thing I asked John, that Galaxy player, was a guy named Alexander Katai. His wife tweeted some horrible things. He didn't.
Right.
His wife did. He denounced them immediately. The Galaxy felt like they had no other option but to release them because they needed to stand for inclusion and not have even someone's spouse on the wrong side of this. Was that fair to punish somebody for what their spouse did?
This is going to sound really crass, but the logic behind we have to release you for something that your wife tweeted is basically the same as saying if you divorce her, we'll keep you. Which Maybe. Makes it extra weird. You see what I'm saying? Like that shows you how kind of ridiculous that logic is on the larger level. Because it's like, well, I'm sorry. If they're confirming that that's his wife, if he says, no, actually, I'm going to just split up with her because this is the thing. Like, would they have kept him then? You know, it's really tricky in that regard because the other side of it doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, I get it. You know, they want to stay as far away from everything as possible. But for me, you can make teaching moments out of things. And this is not something that I would release a player over, or at least claim that's why I did it. I don't love that, you know, even though they're trying to be on the right side of history, it just doesn't It doesn't feel right to me. Just doesn't,
and it's a very weird precedent. And there's tough ones going on all over the country. I mentioned to you off the air, the one in Minnesota where the guy...
Police chief in an on-air situation, yeah.
Yeah, well, the guy who runs the police union, who appears to be, his job is to defend the police. It's not an easy job right now in Minnesota. They're getting rid of everybody. But his job is to defend the police. He's married to a news anchor, and people are calling for her head. They want the news anchor out because her husband has that job. And so it's a hard... Boy, once you cross that bridge, it's a very hard thing to legislate. I'm not actually sure what the right answer is. But
it's tough.
It's a hard thing to answer. Okay, coming up next, the NFL players have just gotten out of a meeting, 1,400 of them on a virtual Zoom kind of meeting. What could that possibly lead to? We'll get into that next. Clinton Yates in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Clinton Yates filling in for Mace today.
What's up, kiddos?
Herm Edwards coming on in less than an hour. Herm's going to join us at 4:30 to talk about everything that's going on in the world. Clinton, there was an NFL players meeting today that supposedly up to 1,400 players participated in a Zoom call. And they just talked about what's happening and, you know, the kind of the state of the world. And I was thinking that, you know, when you watch the way they've come together, the video they put together that forced Roger Goodell to do some things we never thought he would do, put out his own video and to say we were wrong and mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter. I would think, and I'm curious if you agree with it, that the NFL players probably have more leverage and power right now than they've ever had before. You agree?
I do agree with that for a couple different reasons. I'll let you finish what you're getting at, but I do think that is correct. This is as powerful as the NFL Players Association has ever been.
So my thought is this. What could they... All right, so all these players were on a call today. What could they use that power to achieve? Like, what could they ask for? Would it be unreasonable or, for lack of a better word, overstepping if they said, look, these are extraordinary times. We want Colin Kaepernick in a training camp, and if he's not, we ain't showing up. Get him an opportunity or else we won't honor our opportunity. Would that work?
Maybe, but here's the deal, is that the reason why this leverage has become what it's become, particularly on Kaepernick, is because this is where the Black Lives Matter and COVID situation overlap. Because the way that the power dynamic works, there's no games anymore. And the games are not coming up until later when there's going to be no fans. And so all of this stuff as to what you thought you were going to lose by Colin Kaepernick getting there or playing, well, that's already out the window anyway. So the leverage is more so in, it's in something that we couldn't really control. And I don't know personally, like I've said this before on television, I don't need Colin Kaepernick in an NFL jersey to feel that his efforts were validated. To me, we're at
the stage. It sounds like they want it, Clinton. It sounds like the players, like most of the guys who have spoken out, guys like Malcolm Jenkins and yesterday Carlos Hyde, they all have been asking for it.
I get that, and that's fine. But for me, the Kaepernick football journey, specifically right now, is for Colin Kaepernick. He protested because it was a larger issue. Look outside of your window. The larger issue is being addressed at the very gates of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. That has gone to the top. So, like, at this point, yes, of course I want Colin Kaepernick, if he wants to play football, to play football. But as a fan and as a person that I would just say, for lack of a better term, is down with the cause, Cap playing football is not that high ranking on things that I care about for anybody other than him. So, for me, if you're going to have all this leverage, using it for that, it would be symbolic, and I think in many ways it would be honorary. And I don't think it would necessarily be a bad thing, but I think that if you're going to find one chip you're going to play, that might not be the one.
You know, say what you want about Jerry Jones, but he's not stupid. Jerry Jones, you know, he's a lot of things. Some people love him. Some people hate him. He's an excellent businessman. He is outspoken. He normally speaks out about everything. Why is he sitting this out? Why do you think, Clinton, he hasn't said anything? I can't remember the last time Jerry Jones didn't address any football-related issue. What's going on this time?
Do you remember what you started that paragraph with? Jerry Jones isn't stupid. Like, Jerry Jones is not going to do what tens of other owners have done. He's not going to do what a bunch of other people have done, which is just step out and say something unnecessarily and end up jamming up all his money in his franchise. You know? I mean, he was kneeling weirdly with the players. Remember that, where he got down on a knee with the jacket on? He had the goofy face look on his face. Like, I think Jerry knows, you know what? I'm rich. I'm Jera. I got a brand. We got a football season. This is not my ministry, as we say where I'm from. You know, I just don't think that he's... I don't need him to add anything. You know, I mean, there's nothing that guy says that makes me think, oh, okay, something's going to change. I mean, he's just not the person. And I actually kind of commend him for this. Not because we don't know his views, but like, dog, some people are really stupid. We've seen people lose their jobs saying foolishness. You know, I think this is kind of one of those cases. Jerry's like, you know what? I'm good on this. I'll just sit back here and count my money and play these football games and figure out what's going on with Dak Prescott and my starting quarterback situation, because that's a little bit dicey. Don't at me about that. All right, I'm just saying, it's a little weird that they brought in a backup who's also a starter when they're playing against that division in all the away games in that particular conference. That's another story. But my point is that sometimes shutting up ain't that bad of an idea.
Well, and what's interesting is, you know, a lot of people are saying if you're silent, you're complicit. And they guilted James Dolan, the owner of, you know, the Knicks, into finally doing something, because they were like one of two NBA teams who didn't send out anything. And so the Knicks finally sent out a statement, and it wasn't good, but it wasn't, I mean, it was just kind of innocuous. But I was listening to Max Kellerman. Listen to Max. This was on First Take yesterday, when Max, who grew up a Knicks fan, just unloaded about the statement that James Dolan and the Knicks sent out. Here's Max.
Well, those are all good sentiments, and we should all share those values for sure. But let me ask something of this clown organization. It took you 2 weeks plus to come up with that? 2 weeks to come up with that? A grade school kid could come up with that today, like right now. If I gave them the assignment in 5 minutes, write something about values that we should share as a society. 5 minutes, a grade school kid could write that. It took the New York Knicks, a multi-billion dollar organization, more than 2 weeks? So that's one. That is pathetic, James Dolan. Pathetic. Just like your organization, which finishes dead last or near to it basically every year for decades now. Congratulations. The second thing is, say Black Lives Matter. It's not hard. Just say Black Lives Matter. Can you write that somewhere in your statement? Can you say George Floyd's name? What are you afraid of? What is Dolan afraid of? He can't have one of his flunkies write Black Lives Matter or say the name George Floyd. What is he afraid of? It's easy. Black Lives Matter. George Floyd, his life mattered. Say his name. Write it down. Send it out. I do not see, this is the latest example, but maybe this will be the final straw for some people. I had a final straw years ago watching Dolan mishandle the team of my boyhood, the team that I rooted for, at least the franchise. Until he does say Black Lives Matter or George Floyd's name in an official Knicks press release, I don't see how you can root for this team.
So, Clinton, that right there illustrates the point you made, that the Knicks statement wasn't good, but
no,
he just got obliterated, Dolan, for just commenting. You know, it wasn't offensive, the statement. He, like Max said at the beginning of that, those are all good values. But to your point, if Jerry Jones says anything, no matter what it is, it could be attacked. And yeah. I think that's why some people are sitting this out.
Yeah, and that's fine by me. I don't need...
cancel culture is out.
Exactly. And just also, like, it's not just cancel culture. Like, I'm sorry, I'm smarter than that. I don't need statements from every Tom, Dick, and Harry who's got a flag in their front yard. I just don't. You know?
Yeah.
I know right from
good
wrong.
Good point.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm over statements. I was over statements a week ago. You know, none of them were particularly enlightening for me outside of, you know, things that were sports adjacent. But like, yeah, okay, statement. You got a bunch of, you know, you got a bunch of black ink, you know, I mean, like a black background and white ink. Okay, cool. Sweet. Half of the baseball teams did it. They were all garbage. You know, I mean, so I will give Jerry credit in at least reading the room on the necessity. But also for Max there, it's a little different because it's the New York Knickerbockers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like what they represent, who they are, what that place is. That's a kind of a different story. I understand that Dallas has had their issues in terms of, not issues, but in terms of their tragedies regarding law enforcement and so forth. We've seen everything that's happened. But it's a slightly different market scenario where I think that it doesn't read as necessary in Dallas for Cowboys fans as it does in New York for the Knicks.
Coming up, the NBA has an incredibly difficult decision to make regarding the campus in Orlando. And one specific rule that they're thinking about putting in, is it hard. I'm not sure what the right answer is. We'll kick it around. Clinton's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.